a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
From our last meeting.
Second.
Moved by Senator Nygaard, seconded by Senator Lederman. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried. A couple things to start today. We will, we're going to defer one bill, Senate Bill 145, until next Wednesday. And so we will be hearing bills in the order, Senate Bill 78 first, and then the two House bills, 1025 and then 1028 in that order. Those of you who are planning to testify, please sign the register back there by the door so that we can be sure that we get your names correctly, correctly recorded into the minutes. I would ask that anyone who has a cell phone or anything that would make noise, please turn that off. And remember to identify yourself when you step up to the microphone, because not only we want to know who you are, but we also want to identify you for the benefit of the people that are listening in out on the Internet, either be it live or be it sometime at a later time as those proceedings are recorded. Let's see our two pages, one of which is absent for the moment, but we have Heidi Reiners from Pierre, and our two interns are Ashley Tanner from Gettysburg and Sam Stroman from Rapid City, Box Elder. Let's see, I guess I'll take one moment of personal privilege at this time. The other day, where I got a chance to introduce my daughter and son-in-law, Heidi, whose name is the same as our page, and Sean Dahlstrand from Chicago. And before the attention span runs out, they also have two little grandchildren, Brian and Spencer, that are learning about state government at a very early age. Our other page is now back, Gemma Trask from Wall. And I believe with that, we are ready to begin. So we will hear the start the hearing of Senate Bill 78, which is an act to repeal the provision that provides the use of federal income tax credits when assessing certain property. And we will listen to our first proponent. Good morning.
Good morning, members of the Commerce and, Taxation Committee, Mr. Chairman. Senator Eldon Nygaard from District 17, which is Clay and Turner County. I bring this bill before you today as a result of a meeting with our county commissioners and our Clay County tax assessor, who have asked me to research and bring this bill to you. We seek the repeal of what was Senate Bill 161 in that was passed through this legislature in 2009. And it was a bill that came on the after a Supreme Court case in our state, which I'll be reading from during my presentation. What it does is to take back the guidance that we gave 2 years ago to our directors of equalization, to give them guidance on how to assess special properties. And the properties that I'm referring to are the Federal Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program in America that is administered through, set up by the federal government, but administered through our South Dakota Housing Authority in determining how much tax credits can be used each year under this program per project. I requested the fiscal note through our Commerce and Energy chairman, and we didn't, as you well know, they're quite busy over there, but we did get some guidance in, by way of the fiscal note, so I was going to read that to you, that Minnehaha County uses a sales method when determining property values for this class of property. So as a result, South Dakota codified law 10-6-78 has no direct impact on them as they use a different method. Pennington County, however, in Rapid City area, has utilized this 10-6-78 to assess certain properties. And as a result, Pennington County reports that they've lost approximately $20 million in assessed value from various properties since the law went into effect. Clay County has utilized 10-6-78 to assess certain properties, and one property has verified project costs, excluding the land clause, totaling $1,639,000. And at the time of the change in the law, Clay County had assessed it at $1.741 million. The valuation resulted in a $49,966, or roughly $50,000 annual tax liability for the owner. And then when the law was changed, the property now is assessed at $428,750. So the tax liability dropped from $50,000 down to just over $12,000. So well over $37,000, closer to $38,000 a year in tax revenue on that one project in Clay County then disappeared. And that's why they brought it to me. And citing from the Supreme Court case, under the analysis and decisions of the case known as Town Square Limited Partnerships versus Clay County Board of Equalization, dated 2005, one of the things that I immediately noticed was the cite of the Article 11, Section 2 of the South Dakota Constitution that states that taxes shall be uniform on all property of the same class. And so you could see from this fiscal note that they seem to take a long time to return and have a hard time gathering data, that these tax matters of that type of property are being handled across the state of South Dakota in a relatively different manner, depending upon the jurisdiction. With that, I think what I'm going to do is step down and be available for questions and ask our county assessor to take the stand.
Thank you, Senator. Further proponents to Senate Bill 78? Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Gene Lunn, and I'm the Director of Equalization for Clay County in Vermilion, South Dakota, and I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today. I come in favor of Senate Bill 78, and as Senator Nygaard has noted, there has been an impact in Clay County regarding South Dakota Codified Law 10-6-78, which Senate Bill 78 is looking at repealing that law. Clay County property, one property in Clay County utilizes Senate Bill or Codified Law 10-6-78, and as Senator Nygaard noted, that property has verified costs of $1.6 million. As a result of this, of the law 10-6-78, the tax valuation of that property was reduced down to $428,750. Not being able to use the income, in this particular case, we're required to use the income approach for appraising the property, but not being able to use the tax credits reduced the assessed valuation from $1.7 million down to $428,000. And as Senator Nygaard noted, the Clay County did go all the way to the South Dakota Supreme Court in this case, and the South Dakota Supreme Court ruled in our favor at that time. And it was at that time that the property owner chose the avenue of a law change, in which was the result of 10-6-78. The South Dakota Supreme Court ruling, it was 2005, South Dakota 99, and there are a few things in there that I would like to read, if be permitted to do so. Some of the things that the Supreme Court justices wrote in that ruling was, restrictions do not diminish the property value, but instead balance tax credits allow the developer against rent restrictions imposed on the developer. Restrictions are freely entered into contractual covenants, not governmental regulations. The taxpayer may not artificially alter the value of the property below fair market value. And in effect, that's what happens when using these tax credits, because if you have to use the income approach, you know, and you can't use the tax credits that are given to these particular developers, the value is drastically reduced. Several reasons we think the South Dakota laws for consideration of both restricted rental rates and tax credits for the low-income housing tax credits. First, for taxation purposes, South Dakota makes no distinction between tangible and intangible property. Second, South Dakota has a broad definition of real property that would encompass tax credits, and the definition includes the rights and privileges thereto belonging. And third, the program is a method for developers and owners to optimize their real estate investment. To ignore these credits, which enhance value, would be to ignore the realities of the marketplace. That was the words of the South Dakota Supreme Court. They also go on to say that the county and the state should not be forced to bear the burden of increased taxation merely because taxpayers intentionally or through poor business judgment has consummated a long-term uneconomical lease. The owner should not be allowed to reduce tax valuation in such a manner. The central issue, they write in their final conclusion, the central issue here is whether the restricted rents imposed and the federal tax credits enjoyed by the owners affect the value of the property. Those tax credits make ownership of the property more desirable, and because the tax credits can be transferred to purchasers, they enhance the value of the property. We conclude that in assessing this property for tax purposes, both tax credits and restricted rental rates must be used. That was the words of the South Dakota Supreme Court. You know, I guess in closing my comments, I'd just like to state that, I'm definitely not against the low-income housing tax credits. Affordable housing is a key issue in South Dakota, in every community in South Dakota, and the low-income housing tax credits is an excellent way for developers to be able to develop low-income housing and offer the reduced rents. It's an excellent incentive. For example, in the property that I have been speaking to, the developer had verifiable costs of $1.6 million, which resulted in him receiving $1,592,630 in tax credits, or $159,263 a year in tax credits. Now, if that developer is in a 33% tax bracket, that's shielding over $450,000 a year, or it's reducing his tax liability on over $450,000 a year. With that formula, he would have recovered his costs for the entire project in just a little over 3 years. I believe that is a huge incentive to develop low-income housing. There are three methods in which an assessor can value property. The first method is the market approach, and that's using comparable sales. Senator Nygaard attested to the fact that that's what's being done in Minnehaha County. Well, in Minnehaha County, I'm sure they have enough sales to where they can come up with, you know, fair and average values for this type of property. We do not have that luxury in Clay County. These types of property in Clay County, number one, are rare and rarely exchange hands. The second approach is the income approach, and that's the approach which, through court case, we're being forced to use in Clay County. And that is an effective approach to valuing property if you can get accurate numbers. And that is not always easy to do. My charge as county assessor is to equalize the property values of all like class properties within the county. And if one person gives me numbers and another one doesn't, and the other one gives me half numbers and stuff, there's no way to really come up with a fair and equal way of assessing the property. The third approach is the cost approach, and we use Marshall Swift valuations, which is a national recognized method of valuing, and it's the best approach for Clay County simply because the lack of volume of sales, comparable sales, to be able to come up with a fair and equal value for the property. Now, I said that I'm not opposed to the low housing tax credits. However, I am opposed to having them used to adversely affect the assessment value of the property, resulting in the transfer of local taxes from the developer to the other residents of the county. And like in our case, approximately $37,000 a year is being shifted from the developer's expense to the rest of the county. And I do not believe that is fair, especially in light of the fact that they are receiving over the course of a 10-year period somewhere in the area of $4.5 million in value for those tax credits. As the South Dakota Supreme Court justice stated in their decision, the county and the state should not be forced to bear the burden of increased taxation merely because a taxpayer intentionally entered into an agreement that might adverse the value of the property. The owner should not be allowed to reduce the tax valuation. Thank you for listening to my comments. I would be open for any questions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. We'll withhold questions until all the testimony has been offered. From the tone of your testimony, it would appear that you are testifying as County Director of Equalization, and so I will have to ask you to be sure and stop down at the Secretary of State's office and register as a lobbyist. Senator Nygaard can point that out, how you go about that, but I appreciate that. Further proponents to Senate Bill 78? For the proponents, we have additional people supporting Senate Bill 78. Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 78?
Good morning, Mr.
Good morning.
Chairman, committee members. My name is Mark Lossing. I'm the Executive Director of the South Dakota Housing Development Authority. When housing tax credits are awarded developments by SDHDA, the credits awarded are limited to the amounts that make the projects financially feasible. Because of high construction costs and low rents in South Dakota, affordable housing projects are very difficult to develop in this state. In many cases, there needs to be multiple funding sources to enable these projects to cash flow. Residents that rent from these projects are limited to having incomes that are at or below 60% of the area median income. The rent for these projects are also limited, and in most cases, they're restricted for a period of up to 40 years. If housing tax credits are added to the assessment value of low-income housing tax credit properties, the developments would be caught in a position that could potentially cause them to default or incur financial difficulty. The annual demand for these affordable housing tax credits in South Dakota is 2 to 3 times the amount of credits that are available. If Senate Bill 78 is passed, future projects will require large additional amounts of housing tax credits, which will result in less affordable housing in South Dakota. One of the misconceptions about the tax credits is that this owner has this tax credit for 10 years, that they get this benefit for 10 years. In all of these projects, these tax credits are sold to syndicators and investors, and they get the 10 years of credits bought up front, and that is put as equity in the project. That way they have to borrow less money on another loan so that they can afford to pay their debt service and charge these lower rents. So, and for the benefit of affordable housing, I ask you your support in voting no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Further opponents to Senate Bill 78. Further opponents. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Bob O'Connell with the Sioux Falls Area Chamber of Commerce, a partner with the Sioux Empire Housing Partnership, providing low-income housing in Sioux Falls and the surrounding area. In discussing this with Mr. Jim Schmidt, who is the president or the executive director of Sioux Empire Partnership, Senate Bill 78 will have a chilling impact on low-income housing in Sioux Falls area especially in small towns such as T, Harrisburg, and the like. The increased taxes will result in more difficult financing and a reduction in affordable housing. What would be very detrimental, it would be very detrimental to economic development because housing is required for the employees in that area in order to get employees for businesses. It would also hurt the elderly and those who are trying to reestablish credit histories. The bill that is attempted to be repealed today passed both houses of the legislature 2 years ago without any dissenting votes in either taxation committees or on the floor of either the House or the Senate, and was signed by the governor. That means there is a lot of people out there who are relying on that bill as going forward for some very big and large projects that are going forward. It makes sense for South Dakota to have this available so that we can continue with low-income housing, as you heard, there's two or three times the demand out there that we are able to do. If you pass this, it will have a chilling effect and we'll be unable to continue going forward. Please defeat this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connell. Further opponents? Good morning. Welcome
morning.
To Senate Tax.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brett Healy. I'm testifying on behalf of myself. I'm a farmer and rancher from near Chamberlain, South Dakota. Actually, a different tax than the Affordable Housing Tax. Senate Bill 161 from 2 years ago also prohibited the use of valuation of income tax credits and incentives across the board that included the alcohol fuels tax credit, biodiesel tax credit, renewable electricity tax credit. Folks, this will have a chilling effect not only on affordable housing, but on further ethanol expansion in the state, further biodiesel expansion in the state, and, for that matter, wind farms across the board. There's no question that once you start, especially with the ethanol end of things, the small producer tax credit that goes to investors in these ethanol plants, and by the way, I am an investor in two of the plants, the one in Redfield and the one in Wentworth. The small producer tax credit could certainly be included in the valuation of those properties, and the net result is a lesser return to folks that have made that commitment. Certainly, you should recognize the number of jobs in small communities across the state. I did, catch my ear when the Director of Equalization was speaking about that they don't have many comparable sales. That certainly would come into play when you've got an ethanol plant in a county. There is not that many comparable sales. All of a sudden, you're going to be causing great problems in that regard, but especially the chilling effect of further expansion in something that, certainly the governor and agricultural leaders around the state have seen as a great economic development for the state. With that in mind, certainly encourage the committee to vote this down. No, the legislature got this right 2 years ago on a 105-0 vote. It's good policy to leave that alone. If you're going to institute a income tax, which is what I view this as being, you just well do that straight up as opposed to through the back door. And with that, please vote no.
Thank you, Mr. Healy. Further opponents to Senate Bill 78. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Julie Johnson. I'm with Absolutely Aberdeen. I am their registered lobbyist, but I also work for our organization the rest of the year as well. We are a growth initiative in Northeast South Dakota, and one of the many pieces of our economic development work that we work on is affordable housing, part of a team across community lines that are they're working to be sure that we have enough affordable housing in our community, and we've worked on that in many ways, including with some of the people who have testified before me. I would point out to you two things. One, the bill itself refers to, or the current language of the current law refers to sections 38, 42, and 47 of the Internal Revenue Code. I did happen to open up section 38 of the Internal Revenue Code. The list is as long as your arm about other tax credits that would also have to be added back where they applied to property. It includes such things as the New Market Tax Credit, the Indian Employment Credit, and several, the Empowerment Zone Employment Credit. South Dakota has some of these. We do have a New Markets Tax Credit Zone in downtown Aberdeen. They're very few and far between across South Dakota, but usually in the most low-income areas of South Dakota are eligible to get those credits as well. So with that and the reasons that have been stated before me, I would urge your defeat of Senate Bill 78, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Further opponents to Senate Bill 78? Further opponents? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jeremiah D. Murphy. I'm a lawyer from Sioux Falls. I'm a registered lobbyist in this matter for Citibank South Dakota. And in addition, I appear as a resident, citizen, elector, and taxpayer. Because as a resident, citizen, elector, and taxpayer, my wife and I funded a corporation known as St. Joseph Catholic Housing for the Diocese of Sioux Falls. And the Diocese of Sioux Falls then was able, because of that corporation, to build affordable housing for people in great need. And my best explanation might be the first housing unit they did. They built 48 townhouses in Sioux Falls. And Citibank was so aggressive in setting the interest rate low that they had a goal. They had a goal that that townhouse rent out to a single person with two children making $8 an hour. And you can imagine that they had to charge almost no interest to get the rent down for that person. Now, that's a very successful project. From then until now, St. Joseph Catholic Housing has built 750 units, mostly in eastern South Dakota, and not all in Minnehaha County and Lincoln County. That's 16 different projects. And that's a lot of benefit to the state, and that's a lot of benefit to those poor people. But if the purpose of this bill is to raise the assessments on those properties, and candidly it is, that rent, the rent of those people will have to go up. That's where the costs go. When your costs go up, it goes into your rent. Your rent goes up. And, I don't have any ownership. We don't have any ownership in St. Joseph Catholic Housing. We got our capital back. We extended capital to that corporation for several years and we got it back. So, I don't have any, skin in the game, if you will. I did have some in one sense only, but I think it's an extraordinarily valuable program, and the court approved using an income approach on the one hand, and on the other hand, if they're going to use an income approach, I don't know how you can go and look at the cost approach, because in that project I described to you, that was about $1.6 million project. And when you're going to make that affordable for somebody that makes $8 an hour and has two kids, you can't be raising the taxes on it. And I don't think my understanding is Minnehaha uses the income approach at valuing these properties, and I don't think it's been a problem in Minnehaha. And I know the testimony is different than that, and I respect the gentleman that gave it, and I'm sure that's what he was told, but But my understanding is that in Minnehaha, it's an income approach, and we have a lot of these projects, and they're helping a lot of people. And the legislature obviously saw a problem 2 years ago and addressed it. And I think it's really premature to undress it. The problem with this change is that places where we've been getting along fine, it seems to me assessors are going to think, well, gee, I should raise the assessment. And the economic fact is that once the credit's sold, it's sold. It goes into equity. It goes into brick and mortar and things like that. It's gone. It's sold. It isn't sold every month when the rent comes in. It's gone. And I think that's a misunderstanding about tax credits. They're an incentive to invest, but once they're sold, they're sold. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Any other opponents to Senate Bill 78? Any other opponents? Any other opponents to Senate Bill 78? Seeing none, Senator Nygaard, if you'd like a couple minutes to rebut.
There, Senator Nygaard, District 17, there were other opponents listed on the thing that did not testify, and I was just wondering why that had been, but perhaps the eloquence of the other speakers took the data. Minnehaha County uses a sales method, according to our fiscal note from Aaron Olson, LRC, when determining property values for this class of property. So as a result, SDCL 10678 has no direct impact on property values in Minnehaha County. At least that's what LRC found out in talking to Kyle Helseth of Minnehaha County, Deputy Director of Equalization. So I would suggest that there's a confusion there. I realize that low-income housing is a very, very important concern across South Dakota. I guess I'm still a proponent of the bill in that it creates an unusually large advantage for these low-income, for tax credits, housing versus the marketplace for people who don't have the tax credits. And that's also been some input that I've received by email. So with that, I would urge your passage of Senate Bill 78.
Thank you, Senator. With that, we will open up for questions of the committee members, of any of those offering testimony. Does anyone have any questions? Senator Hunstead?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And frankly, I don't know who to ask this question of, but I'm guessing that many of you probably have the answer. Would these low-income housing units be owned, or are these mostly rental place? I mean, obviously they're owned by someone, but they're occupied not by the owners, they're occupied by renters. Would that be fair? I'm seeing a lot, Mr. Chairman, I'm seeing a lot of heads shaking yes, and I assume that was true. So thank you.
Any other questions? Any questions? Well, seeing none, we will open to a committee action or discussion. Senator Maher. Okay. Second by motion by Senator Maher, seconded by Senator Lederman to refer this to the 41st day. Any speaking to the motion? Seeing none, those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those who oppose will vote nay, and the secretary will call the roll.
Frisley?
Aye.
Hunstead?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Nygaard?
No.
Lederman?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
6-1.
Okay. Senate Bill 78 is defeated on a 6-1 vote, moved to the 41st day. This will now bring us to, as I mentioned earlier, we will defer Senate Bill 145 until 1 week from today. So we will now take up House Bill 1025, House Bill 1025. This is an act to revise certain provisions regarding references to the Internal Revenue Code. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Michael Kenyon, South Dakota Department of Revenue and Regulation. This is our annual bill to update our references to the IRS code. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kenyon. Any other proponents to Senate or House Bill 1025? Any other proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1025? Any opponents? Seeing none, any questions from the committee? Senator Maher.
Mr. Chairman, there's actually, I think, 11 sections in the bill, and each of them updates a different reference to our IRS code. We've got property tax exemptions. Some of those are linked to a federal status. So for example, some of them have to be a 501c3. And when we reference the Internal Revenue Code, we want to use the latest edition of that. Our bank franchise tax is linked to into this as well. So it's a lot of property tax exemptions, a couple of alcohol things, but mostly property tax exemptions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, as long as he's...
Senator Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Internal Revenue Code that deals with income taxes, I'm sure.
Right.
We do key, so I'm asking a question of you, and I'll try to get at it. We key a lot of exemptions to property taxes or reduced property taxes, and in some cases reduced or eliminated sales taxes based on the fact that these folks don't pay any income tax. I was wondering if you could give me insight on why we might think in South Dakota that someone who does not have to pay income tax to the federal government would not have to pay sales taxes or property taxes in South Dakota. What is the relationship, and why do we need to change this based on whatever that relationship is?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
This isn't an actually this wouldn't be a substantive change to the status. What it is is we make a relationship, and this isn't a relationship that's controlled by the federal law. We have, for example, if you think about our municipal property tax reduction program, which is Section 7 of the bill, we have a number of criteria that the person has to meet. One of those criteria is a status. If you look at Section 7, it's part of their income. Their income is one of the requirements of getting this extra status, this protected status, and we use their revenue, their income that's reported to them, that's the same revenue that's that the federal income tax use for their federal income taxes. So all we're doing is saying that, you know, we've got our own criteria for whether they qualify for the program or not. One of those programs is an income component, and to do that, we incorporate the federal income tax income definition for our criteria. So it isn't like we're sort of substituting our judgment for the federal judgments. We're just borrowing their language and their system, basically. Hope that makes sense.
Okay, well, if there's no further questions, we're open for committee action. Moved by Senator Frisley, do pass. Seconded by Senator Lederman. Any speaking to the motion? All in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say nay, and the secretary will call the roll.
Frisley?
Aye.
Hunstead?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Nygaard? Lederman?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
6. Unanimous.
Motion carries on a 6-0 vote. Senator Lederman.
Move consent.
Do we have a move by Senator Lederman to put on the consent calendar, or do we have a second?
Aye.
Seconded by Senator Nelson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 1025 will go on the consent calendar. And I guess, Senator Nelson, would you want to be prepared to speak to that on the floor if necessary? This brings us now to House Bill 1028, which is an act to revise the dates of certain tax returns and remittances. House Bill 1028, do we have our first proponent?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, Jane Page, Department of Revenue. This bill comes to you today from the Streamline Governing Board. One of the things we looked at the Streamline meetings was the due dates for tax returns and just trying to make them a little more uniform. What this says is that we have two types of returns, paper returns and electronic returns. If those returns are due on a Saturday, Sunday, holiday, or day the Federal Reserve is closed, they'll get till the next business day to file a return. The day the Federal Reserve is closed actually matches up exactly to our holidays, so there's no change there. And actually, currently with the paper returns, if it's due on a Sunday or a holiday, it's not due till the next business day anyway. We have said, because the post office is open on Saturdays and we go by postmark date, that right now, before this bill is passed, they still have to file on a Saturday. This would give them till the next business day. With our electronic returns, which are a little bit different, kind of unique to South Dakota, the electronic returns, and I don't know if any of you have a business and file electronically, the returns are always due the 23rd of the month, but the payment's not due till the second to the last business day of the month. Because we don't require people to file electronically, when this was put in place, it was kind of a hook to get people to file electronically because they got to keep their money a little bit longer. So the payment is not due till the second to the last business day of the month. So this bill actually will have no impact on the payments for the electronic returns, just on the due dates. And with the due dates for the electronic return, like I said, we said it was the 23rd. And because it's electronic, they can file it 24/7. We never gave them any extra time to file that return. If the 23rd was on a Sunday, they had to file it on a Sunday. This will give them till the next business day to file that return. I checked, and for next year, there's only 1 month, or the next fiscal year, there's only 1 month where a return falls on a Saturday. So this really doesn't have much impact on what we're doing. And this bill applies to sales tax, use tax, contractors' excise tax, and then fuel tax returns also. So I urge your support of House Bill 1028. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Page. Further proponents to House Bill 1028? Further proponents? Proponents to House Bill 1028. If there are none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1028? Anyone in opposition to House Bill 1028? Seeing none, are there any questions of committee members? Seeing none, we'll close the hearing to testimony and ask for committee discussion or action. Senator Nygaard.
I move to pass.
Okay, we have a motion by Senator Nygaard, seconded by Senator Lederman, that this bill be on a due pass. Any speaking to the motion?
It just makes sense that we accommodate the post date.
Okay. We will ask those in favor to vote aye, those opposed to vote nay, and the Secretary will call the roll.
Frisley?
Aye.
Hunstead?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye. The motion carries on a, let's see, what do we got, seven?
Seven
to zero vote. Moved by Senator Nelson, seconded by Senator Lederman. To put this on the consent calendar, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 1028 goes on the consent calendar, and let's see, I guess I'll carry that. This brings us to the point of where we've finished our business for today. We will meet again on next Monday, February 7th, which will be the 17th legislative day. And at that time, we will have two sales tax bills and I guess we'll probably have another House bill that we will take care of. We're getting down to the point of where we don't have a lot of work left to do. We've had a couple bills that have been deferred. As we've mentioned this morning, the one will come back next Wednesday. And so I believe that we're in a position for a motion to adjourn. Moved by Senator Nelson, seconded by Senator Frisley. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you very much.